Coming up on today's episode, SpaceX wants to give everybody internet, NASA's going back to the moon, and an update on the supercharger network. Huh? Well, let's get ludicrous. Hello and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's happening right now to make our future totally ludicrous. Did that move fast? I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut, and I have internet sometimes. And with us is Ben Solens.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. Yeah, I was half expecting your stream to cut out right as they went to launch, but, you know, thankfully they scrubbed. So,
guys, that needs to be a thing on your channel now.
Yeah. No, I that is like my, the most, like, I lose sleep now because of that. And I'm not kidding. Like, people are going to stop coming to my stream if they know that every time the rocket's going to launch, I can't cover it reliably.
Well, it could be like a Jablonski Games thing where, like, you never actually cover the rocket launch. You just, like, go up to that point and then cut. You know, like he never does gaming. It's like, oh, there's a thing. We got to wait. Elgato, whatever.
So you're going to lose, like, half of your audience, which means you'll only have, like, 50,000 people watching for your live streams.
I don't have that many people watching my live streams.
You got a crazy amount of people watching your live streams.
But I'm just stressing out because...
I would be nervous. I'm nervous for you, actually.
Well, the thing is, I don't get it. It'll be rock solid literally all day long. I had to switch internet providers. I'm now on Mediacom. And I will swear at them all day and night. And I sent them a very angry text to the sales rep this morning going, hey, listen, I was screaming about how bad Mediacom is to my audience of 300,000 last night. Maybe you want to help me make sure my line doesn't cut out like that, you know? And he's like, I'll see what I can do.
Well, could there be any other internet providers in your area sometime soon, Tim?
Well, I don't know about sometime soon, Ben, but that's a great question. Because in the ludicrous future that we're going to live in, starting hopefully tonight, SpaceX is going to work on getting internet to literally anyone, anywhere. Period. Which is crazy. So let me show you guys this. You guys know...
By the way, Ben wins the award for best segue so far
that is
on this
easily
channel.
Best segue.
Pretty smooth.
So here we go, guys. This is the Starlink, SpaceX's Starlink constellation. This has been pretty... They've been pretty quiet about it because I think they just really wanted to knock it out of the park, you know, and beat the competition to this. So yesterday they had a teleconference before the supposed launch. It ended up getting scrubbed yesterday due to upper level winds. But Elon got on the phone and took some good kind of a little rundown on the whole system and took some questions. And here's kind of what we learned. So the first 60, they're launching 60 at a time. 60 freaking satellites are going to space under one fairing. And these are pretty big satellites too. So the first 60 are kind of their first production, like V1. They don't have Ka band antennas, which is kind of the normal bandwidth now. I don't quite get how that works. I'm definitely not a satellite expert. He said some of them might not work. Small possibility, none of them work. And he like reiterated how insanely difficult this technology is. How there's a lot of new parts, a lot of new systems. And yeah. He reiterated how hard it is by saying no LEO constellation has ever worked out without the company going bankrupt.
So encouraging.
Iridium actually has
a constellation though. Like, I mean, I know what he means by that, but what other type?
So there's been other attempts. And then for instance, Iridium actually has a LEO constellation that's active. It's, you know, like fairly low bandwidth, pretty high latency constellation compared to what we're talking about here. They also went bankrupt trying to do that at one point. Hmm. So, yeah. So
what about HughesNet? Is that not in LEO? Is that...
What's HughesNet?
HughesNet is a current satellite internet provider.
Then it's probably geostationary.
Geo, okay.
Yeah. Which is like, there'll be one fixed satellite over your position, you know, or over certain positions. Yeah. LEO satellites end up traveling around the Earth so quickly, they pass by every, like, you know, they're only within visible view for a couple minutes, you know, because they're orbiting the Earth every 90 minutes.
Right.
So as opposed to a geostationary satellite is pointing at one spot and it takes 24 hours to orbit. Therefore, it's facing the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it's far away. It's really far away. So the latency is really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. The HughesNet stuff is super slow and unreliable.
Yep.
That's where everything kind of clicked for me was I was like, so that we do have satellite internet now, but it has to be in this geostationary orbit, which is so far away that you get this huge delay in the transfer times. Whereas the low Earth orbit is like, what, 10 miles that way? it's like right there. But in order, because they're moving so fast, like you said, they have to create this swarm that all communicate with each other, and it bounces the signals from once. So, like, as a satellite's passing over, the next satellite that's passing over, it'll, like, beam that signal across. Yep. And so there's always a satellite overhead, and it's all like kind of mesh connected network. Through this swarm, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're correct. And then the crazy, I think maybe even the hardest part, is your antenna. You know, with a geostationary satellite, they come out and they point this antenna at specifically at a point in the sky. You know, that's why satellite dishes point at a certain point in the sky. This is like a pizza box that you lay down, and it's smart enough to know how to point its phase array antenna automatically and continually track and point at the right satellite at the right time. They had to develop all that in-house. And even though it's like a flat thing, somehow it has this really smart antenna. I don't even know.
Yeah, it's
I have no idea.
Phase array thing, right? So
yep.
This was, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead at all, but this was a question I got a lot back when Starlink first kind of got announced or, you know, details came out about it was, could your Tesla car just connect to it? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer is maybe, but like not currently, not based on what it currently has, because you'd have to install one of these antennas somehow and...
Yep.
You know, so you got this nice glass ceiling with a big pizza box on top.
Pizza box.
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, we are kind of jumping ahead, but really, honestly, we can get into all these details still. But as far as that goes, he did say, like, basically, you can just plug this thing into power, and no matter where you are, it'll work. You know, once the constellation's up and running, or if you're within the coverage of the constellation, like at the beginning. You plug this thing in, you can be on a boat, you know, on an airplane, and it'll work. And yeah, it's about the size of a pizza box. So maybe they can put it on the hood of the vehicle, you know, under the frunk. It sounds like it'd be a potential upgrade for Teslas to have really, really reliable, dedicated bandwidth. But
yeah, which would be great if they upgraded Slacker Radio at the same time, because I honestly don't care if it has a great connection, if that's what I have, to deal with.
The music I don't like plays so much faster.
Yeah, like, great.
Woo. The music I'm not choosing. No, but the thing about this thing is, as I understand it for now, especially like in the beginning of this, let me keep going with the spiel here and I'll kind of wrap back around. We're dealing with 60 satellites at first, and then they're going to be launching after six more launches. So once there's, what is that, over 400 satellites in the sky, that'll be the first actual, like, that's kind of when it'll go, like, operational-ish. You know, they'll be testing these first 60 out, doing all that stuff. But it won't be actually, like, a usable network until there's over 400 in the sky. And then
I thought
he said
it was 800, no?
800, he said, then will be like substantial coverage.
Got it.
So 400 at first will be like initial, like, you know, they'll probably actually start being able to drop some of the stations down under a very limited range of coverage, like a very narrow, like when you think about the Earth, where's my globe? You know, when you think about the Earth, it'll probably be pretty close, I don't know, to the equator or something like that, or some small area, and then they'll just continually expand that out. So after 800 satellites, they'll have a lot more coverage and a lot more bandwidth. And then he said, after a couple thousand, that'll really truly be fully operational, basically. And then the more they add, the more bandwidth they get and the more coverage and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So at first, it sounds like this isn't necessarily going to be sold to you and I. Like, this wouldn't be something that we would get. But at first, it could be. And it may be someday, relatively soon. It might be within 2 or 3 years. This is something that a consumer would just go and buy Starlink. But for now, he was even talking about selling it to other internet providers, to other ISPs. So the idea would be like, you know, say Verizon or someone's trying to get internet in the middle of the Rocky Mountains where they have a hard time getting data, right? You know, they don't want to run a fiber optic line up the mountainside. They could plop one of these down and then feed it out to the city, and they could, you know, divvy that up themselves using Starlink, which is interesting.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I think that does make sense. And, you know, then they could run a little bit of fiber or cable or whatever to, you know, to a city or to a small town, and provide them with reliable and fast internet, which is really cool.
What would be good too is then with that, the local, the Verizons or the local telecom providers would probably be supportive of this.
Right.
Where otherwise they would, I imagine, not be supportive of it. And they tend to have a lot of influence over what's allowed and what's not allowed.
That's true. But however, can you think about this? Like, or can you even think about this, Ben? No, but like, imagine this, like, they can't do anything. I know they could probably try to come up with some weird regulations that say, like, no internet from the sky unless it's, you know, whatever. They could probably do something like that. But think about this. SpaceX is making these satellites themselves. They're launching the satellites on their own rockets themselves. Like,
right. It's a monopoly kind of system. Like, they have control over every aspect of it. Except for I guess the antennas they'd have to make themselves, too.
They're making everything, basically. The star trackers inside the satellites, the Hall thrusters, the ion thrusters.
They're actually making satellites?
Yes.
I thought they're not, you know, Lockheed Martin or somebody?
Nope. They're building their own up in Seattle.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Elon loves his vertical integration, doesn't he?
Yes, he loves vertical integration. And it makes sense for them. Like, now they're not going to pay someone else to do the work that they're going to be, that they can do, you know?
Yeah.
And this is going to be really hard to compete with because they already have the cheapest launch costs. And of course, they're going to be launching their own at cost, you know? So he said, at this point, even the launch is still the most expensive part. So even though there's 60 of these satellites inside this payload fairing, it's still the most expensive part of this is the launch. So think about that, because if he's saying that about their own thing, they charge 60-some million dollars for a customer-ish around there. If they're not charging themselves markup, we can maybe say they make $10 million per launch. I have no idea the actual numbers. So $50 million is maybe the cost. Now, they're reusing the boosters, so really that's probably about $20 to $30 million. So really, you can assume that the actual, like, the cost of the upper stage and the all the things around the launch, including, you know, the actual, like, ground support and all that stuff, let's just make up a number, $20 million. That means these satellites are, like, around $300,000 per satellite, which is crazy cheap. I mean, yeah. I'm totally making numbers up there, but just playing that game out, they are not more expensive than $1 million per satellite, because that would be 60 of them, $60 million launch cost. They're definitely cheaper. They're less than $1 million per satellite, and maybe as cheap as about $250,000, which is really inexpensive in satellite terms. So, yeah. Man. Yeah. Crazy stuff. So anyway, okay, I've got this still pulled up here. They can maneuver around orbital debris. So
that's impressive.
Yeah. So NORAD tracks all, you know, orbital debris, and they have it so that it'll autonomously, like, load up the debris field, and each satellite will be able to just automatically know, oh, here comes a debris field. Because Elon said orbital debris and orbital mechanics is unbelievably, hilariously trackable, or like, what did he say? He used a word, hilariously predictable.
Predictable.
Because it's, yeah, like, there's nothing that can change it. You know, it's going where it's going forever, basically. You know, you figure in its altitude and the drag on the vehicle and all that stuff. But yeah, so they can see it coming. And it's not like it's like a thing of like a car. You steer out of the way last second. It's like, no, you know, this debris field's coming up. You raise your orbit like 3 days in advance. No big deal.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it seems like a big deal if there's thousands of these satellites doing that, but I imagine it's all, you know, automated and, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's all going to be automated in a very SpaceX/Tesla way, you know, like fleets doing things on their own so that people don't have to keep track of it.
So these satellites have the full self-driving chip in it, I guess?
Wouldn't that be nuts if we found out they actually did?
Wouldn't be surprising.
It honestly kind of wouldn't surprise me if we found out that I love that crossover stuff. But another cool thing is these are ion drives powered by krypton. Did you guys even know that was an actual element? Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Hilariously, yeah.
Every time I get near it, I just feel sick.
Yeah.
No, actually, I did know it was an element, but I didn't know it was a noble gas. I didn't know it was, I had no idea actually that it could be used as an ion drive, which is, I had never heard of that before. So that my ears kind of perked up. He said the main reason for that is because it's a lot cheaper than xeon. And when you're operating, mm-hmm. you know, it's not as efficient, but when you're operating a fleet of, you know, thousands of these things like fuel costs definitely come into consideration.
You know, but I would not be shocked if he literally did it because of the name. I would not be surprised. So one point about what you already said, 60 satellites and they need to do 7 launches total. You said this one plus 6 more for it to yep. be operational. Mm-hmm. How many satellites is that, guys? 60 times
420,
7?
420. I know.
420?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
Seriously? Come
and
on.
And he even said this is bad because that's already my unlucky number.
What? That's his lucky number.
No.
Why does he keep using it?
You realize the Dragon capsule blew up on 420.
He should like have, you know, send up 59 right. on the last one or something like that.
Yeah, he probably will, honestly. Like, I wouldn't be surprised now if that's a thing that they avoid.
By the way, I have like a weird fear of April 19th and 20th. Like every year when it comes around, I kind of tighten my buttocks a little bit. Like, no, there's like a lot of really terrible and weird things that have happened on those days. Like, and some of them are related, but like the Oklahoma City bombing, the Waco thing, something else. But I think, Columbine happened on one of those days. Hitler was born on one of those days.
Really?
Now the dragon blew up on that day. Like it's,
it's your weird. Birthday too, Tim, right?
No. Very funny, guys.
Hitler took all the evil out of that day, so it's okay.
Oh, but yeah, the last little bit of stuff is about this is, you know, one of the big concerns is when you have thousands and thousands of satellites, orbital debris is obviously a concern. So these are designed if they go dark. That the reason they're in a lower orbit is so they can deorbit relatively quickly, you know, like within a year or something. And they're also built in a way that is, they will disintegrate almost completely in the atmosphere on reentry. So that they don't have any ground debris. In theory, there's still little bits that might come down. but they took specific design considerations to make sure that when they do fall out of the sky, that they basically completely burn up. Which is cool.
So let me ask about the debris real quick. And Joe, I know you did a video on it. Is it possible to push things that are in orbit using a laser? Like actually shoot a laser at something and have it affect its orbit? Or is that not
depends
powerful
on the size of it. Like if it's a little like paint chip size, of course, you know, you can kind of zap it, maybe even vaporize it with a laser. But yeah, if it's a small piece, you can nudge it down in its orbit. See, this was one of you asked me, so here we go. this was one of the solutions to the space debris Kessler problem, syndrome. Which was like put up satellites with lasers that can just kind of like that can go above right. this debris and fire down
into,
and push it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously if it's like a big satellite, that's not really going to do much, but little pieces that are, you know, which is significant, even if it's a tiny little piece, it's traveling at what? 75,000. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it could still do significant damage. Mm-hmm. But that's an idea. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's ever tested it though.
I like that idea because it sounds totally sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly.
The only concern is, you know, people would be like, they're pointing lasers back at us.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like, that's how your internet works, dummy. That's exactly it's literally how it works.
So I would say the only other things that I think is pretty cool, Ben, that you'd be interested in this is that their launch services contracts are only worth about $3 billion a year. So them launching satellites and stuff for customers is about a $3 billion a year revenue cap. They're saying that they think this is about a $30 billion industry
more than
for
that.
Them.
More
for
than
them,
that.
They were hoping for about a 30, and he was sounded like he was being very, very modest because he said the telecom industry is a $1 trillion industry.
Correct.
And he said, but for now, you know, he's like, we're looking at about 30 billion. And, but like, that's nuts.
So nah, dude, can I play devil's advocate for just a second?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's multiple different types of people, like you talked about earlier, that could be signing up for this. Maybe even like, you know, the airlines and whatnot. But I mean, what advantage would say I have when I have like fiber optic internet over here, as spotty as it can be sometimes? Like, what advantage would residential consumers have to switch to something like this? I guess I'm asking, like, how big is the market here?
Right. Well, there's going to be obviously cases where it won't necessarily be a direct improvement. You know, if you're already wired, you know, fiber to your house, you might not see much of an advantage in the system at all. And this might not be something that caters to you. But some of those other cases where there's, you know, there's communities right next door to me, even where, like I said, you know, now that I'm physically on Mediacom, they only ran fiber to like a couple buildings and then they run cable the rest of the way. And then they have to share it.
You're sharing,
you know, if I could literally put something outside on a pizza dish and get super reliable internet, I would pay whatever it takes to do that myself. But for the other part is just like having, you know, imagine airplanes all having these and you can sit there and have your normal like internet connection on an airplane. No problem. You know, stuff like that. I think there's a lot of fringe cases where it's been so hard to have any kind of decent, reliable internet that they're totally going to, that's totally going to make up for it, you know?
Well, but so I guess that's where my devil's advocate head is going. Like those fringe cases are not, that's a small percentage. That's why they're fringe.
Right.
So is that really going to add up to a whole lot of revenue for them?
Yeah. I mean, even like, think about you hear people that say like, I live downtown Manhattan and I'm limited to this one telecom company and they don't care about me. So there's still going to be a large portion of people that are stuck with one provider that would love to have options.
Okay. So that's a good argument right there, actually. Yeah. Because they do set up these monopolies in various areas and you don't really have a choice, but here's a choice that anybody can have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And, that's a good argument.
Something well done, to sir. Think about too is there's only like what 3 billion people on the internet right now. It's like it's like less than half the world's population. Now, granted, the world's population includes things that are people that are like 90 years plus and also babies. So, you know, there's a big percentage of people that just like will never be on the internet but are alive.
What?
But there babies. Are, you know, tons and tons of communities. In fact, I think Facebook was doing this with their drone ship things that were solar powered that were shooting, you know, laser type internet down to like, you know, rural areas and in Africa and stuff like that, right? And then Google had a thing called Project Loon. I think it was called. Do you remember that? The balloon internet, where basically same idea as basically Starlink here, but instead of having satellites, they were just really high altitude weather balloons.
Right.
And they would go for a couple of years. So this isn't like a new concept per se, right? It's like just a better execution. We could argue.
Well, it's so ambitious. Like, you know, having so here's the last thing I kind of wanted to do. He said in a year and a half, maybe 2 years, SpaceX will probably have more satellites in orbit than all other satellites combined. So that's putting it into perspective of,
Bezos.
How ambitious this really is.
I can understand sometimes why the Musk haters just don't believe the things that he says, because he says such incredibly outlandish things sometimes, but he winds up delivering on it eventually. It's not always on the timeline that he says, but it's like it. Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I think that's the same reason why some people love Elon Musk is because he says these things and it's like, wow, we could actually have this. This could be a thing. This is like so over the top and crazy and cool. And it just makes the world so much more interesting, you know? And
yeah,
I agree.
But the other side of that is people are like, oh, he's just blowing smoke and you know, he's,
yeah,
you know, P.T. Barnum, basically.
I think if you look back at his history of claims and compare them to what they've done, I genuinely truly believe that he delivers on that. Yes, there's some things that don't work out, like battery swapping or like the weird like autonomous snake charge port thing, you know, like ideas that he says they're gonna have and then don't come out. Like, yeah,
free supercharging for life.
$35,000 car.
But wait, isn't right. But they're not taking that away from cars that have that, are they?
No, But okay, it, if you go watch the video, it will always be free forever and ever, always, every person, blah, blah, blah. Like, never, ever have to pay anything. It's like, okay, maybe we do.
Well, it's, yeah, I can see their shareholders probably not liking that concept.
No. I'm not trying to take away from it. Like in broad strokes, what you're saying is 100% true, and that's actually a video idea I have that to talk about those things. I mean, Elon did it at the Model Y event where he was like, here's what everyone said in 2008. Here's what they're saying now, right?
That would be Ford, that'd be a great video. Please do a video that's just Elon's claims versus Elon's reality. Period.
Yeah, like then and now, you know?
Yeah.
Just to cut kind of silence the haters. In fact, do you guys know Chamath? He did, he was on CNN, oh God, Market Watch or something? Yeah, he did.
And they cut his segment short?
Huh?
And they cut his segment short on air?
Yeah.
But they didn't air his full
thing.
That
super aggressive guy.
Dude, I love Chamath. So he's an ex Facebooker as well. And like I followed him for a long time. He was a part of Y Combinator and all that stuff. Like the whole, like deep embedded with Silicon Valley. And just if you watch that interview, you're like, dude nails it. Like exactly what he's saying, you know? So to short the stock or to bet against Tesla is just like the stupidity, you know, pure and simple. But anyways, yeah, so I think that's a good point. Like if you look at what he, you know, there are details that didn't turn out. And I've always kind of like applauded Elon's like listening to the data and changing his mind on things, because I think that's way more, we should really like embrace people and leaders doing that versus kind of sticking to their guns for no real reason. Because I think that just leads to just bad decision making that
Well, so many people kind of follow their pride and say, well, I said that I'm going to do this, so I'm going to do it, and this was my plan, and I'm going to stick to it. It's the smart person that can say, okay, that wasn't the right direction, or that was a failure, and that's fine. Let's just reiterate and move on, or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. You know, agreed. I definitely think that's one of his strengths, and that's one of the things that I think that maybe the group of people that say, like, he is, you know, a liar and a fraud and stuff are the same people that would never change their mind on something with the facts screaming at them in the face. Just like, nope. I said I'm gonna make it all the way to Alabama without fueling up, and I'm gonna do it, you know. But you're out of fuel in Missouri. I don't care. I said I'm doing it.
So go ahead.
We want more Joe.
Jinx.
Joe gets to go first. Joe always gets first.
Oh, I like that rule. you screwed me up. I'm finding some interesting parallels here. I think it's interesting that this is happening at the same time that the whole autonomous thing is happening on the Tesla side, because I think, I know we're lauding praise on Elon today, but like one of the things he is good at and one of his strengths is that sort of lateral thinking, if that's the right word. That may not be the right word, but it's like, you know, I have a car, we could do this autonomous thing and create this network and make all this money as a network. And it's the same kind of thing with SpaceX. Well, I've got a launch company. We could set up a satellite thing. So they have these sort of ancillary projects that actually are almost like the big thing that everything else is sort of supporting. And I don't know if that's something that he had planned from the beginning or if it was just like along the way, he's like, hey, we could do this too. And that could fund XYZ, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that ability to think outside of the narrow scope of what they're doing, so few people are good at that.
Right.
You know, he's somebody that can look straight out and be like, oh, hey, look, there's this thing over here that would be huge, you know? And I applaud to that. Anyway.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Ben, too?
Well, no, I totally agree with that. And I remember when I first heard of Starlink, it blew me away because it was almost like, oh, because you guys can launch stuff into space cheaper than anyone else, you now kind of have a monopoly of putting things in space. So let's do this. So, okay, two points or two comments here. One is a good friend of mine, actually family member that used to work at SpaceX, told me that they all had, when they first heard of Starlink years ago, they had this thing they were saying that when that goes up and when that's up and running, like at real scale, Elon will easily become the richest man in the world, like two or three times over. Like no one will even be able to come close to actual how much money that thing generates. So that I think that $30 billion revenue number is like
insane.
Very small, very conservative.
Agreed.
Because you're not just talking about U.S., you're talking about worldwide.
Global market. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that you can only do from space.
Right, exactly. So then the other thing was, and this is maybe a bit more close to something I care about, is net neutrality. And so in the U.S., and in fact, I mean, in the U.S., we have like a fairly free and open internet. I know they changed some rules recently, but if you go to other countries and stuff, you'll definitely notice the internet is far less open. You can't go to certain websites, like certain services just don't work, for all kinds of reasons. So we actually have it pretty good here, I would say. But if Elon and SpaceX are able to do this, they could essentially say, I don't care what rules you guys have. Ours is going to be the open internet, where it's truly free and truly open, and innovation and things can actually happen. It's not going to be this throttled or kind of controlled thing that you have down on Earth, you mm-hmm. terrestrial people. But so it could, yeah. So things like if you could just snap your fingers and fast forward to 800 satellites or whatever it actually comes online and is available broadly, I think that this is not only going to be hailed by consumers, but governments and stuff are going to move quickly to try to prevent this. Mm-hmm. Think about places like China where the internet is censored heavily. They're not going to like people being able to access these things. And kind of do that. I mean, so I haven't heard anyone talk about this in as big of a context or a big of an impact as I think it could have on humanity.
On global
actually, the China thing
even.
Is really a good point. I guess they would just prevent people from buying the receivers or
3D printers, ban baby. Them. What's up?
Well, yeah. So, but another thing, and I don't mean to be too like pie in the sky or anything, but when you open up the internet to places in the world that don't normally have it, there might be somebody in Uganda or somewhere that has some amazing idea that could do something with this technology that this technology facilitates that they weren't able to do before.
Exactly.
Just having opening up opportunities for people who don't normally have opportunities. There's always somebody out there with the next great idea. It just opens up innovation.
Education is always the ultimate form of freedom. If you want to solve world hunger, teach people how to grow food most economically, and things like that, and solve their own problems locally. No one knows the problems of their community, of their village, of their country better than the people that live there. That's what was always really hard about humanitarian efforts is a lot of times it's a first world problem solver coming into a third world country to say like, all you need, guys, here's your problem. You don't have very good pipes. Let me lay you down some brand new pipes. These are copper. They'll be great. They might not take into consideration that, I'm totally making something up, but that is, kind of
the
thing.
Or they just come in with a bunch of food and the warlords are like, thank you. And just go away with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm really excited about that aspect of it, about the humanitarian aspect of Starlink and other
That's what I mean.
Global
like,
internet
like
services.
This is like potentially as big of a deal as the internet was to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like internet 2.0.
Because the internet is very much under attack and by a lot of different organizations and governments trying to control the flow of information. I mean, not to get too conspiracy theories, but like there is real harm being done by governments and companies by preventing people from accessing information. And this could just supersede all of that. The only issue I see is that SpaceX is a US-based company and therefore could be forced into doing things like letting the NSA use it for their things and whatever, right?
Also, so, if SpaceX makes the rules, why can't they only put pro SpaceX, pro Tesla news sources through and be like, yeah, CNBC, you don't really have a voice here on our internet.
Take that, PewDiePie, we're coming for you.
Yeah. So when you were saying that earlier, Ben, about it being a totally like open internet kind of thing, like of course I hope they go that way with it. I mean, hopefully they won't turn evil on us and say we're gonna just like what? I'm repeating what you just said, but yeah.
Yeah.
that is a possibility. We have to be open to that.
Mindful. Yeah. Oh, it looks like we may have lost Ben, but that's okay because I'm going to go on to the next thing here. So I wanted to kind of talk about that they said that this could fund Starlink is basically them printing money and they will pretty much use this money to continue to develop Starship, which I think is huge, because Starship really is an expensive endeavor. And if they can secure funding, actually, it's funny because I just realized, it just clicked to me that in 2016 at the Dear Moon thing, he said like, or not Dear Moon. Oh my gosh. He goes like, plans for Starship. It was like, blah, 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 funding, like secure funding or something, you know, generate revenue or something, and then like build Starship, like, or build BFR or whatever it was. I guess it was back then, Interplanetary Transportation ITS, System.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if this is like, I don't wonder now. I know this is part of the plan that they had this all along. It's like, hey, we have this really reliable, secure bit of funding that, you know, yeah. So that's cool to think about, guys.
That opens up to me something that I've always felt about Elon and Twitter is they're a lot of the thing, like Elon's behavior on Twitter often seems spontaneous and then blows your mind. So The Boring Company really stands out to me. Like, yo, LA traffic sucks. I hate it. Going to do something about it. And then a week later, yo, check out my new boring tunneling machine. You think it's cool? And you're like, what? How did you do that? That was clearly in the works for like over 2 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't just like snap your fingers, Amazon delivery a freaking boring tunnel machine to your warehouse. So I wonder, yeah, like there's clearly a lot of thought and pre-planning that goes into these things that maybe just seem spontaneous, like, what? He just thought about it and it happened? No. They've been working on this and planning for years. He just announced it in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So all this said, they will use some of this revenue to develop Starship, which they are, I think, trying to use Starship also to not only could they launch Starlink on it, yes, that is a question, but we should maybe get into because this is about Starlink. I'm going to pop over to our Why Don't They Just, and then we'll transition into some other stuff. This is turning into a thing. So I'm going to share my screen here real quick. Let's see here. So Why Don't They Just? This is from this one comes from Ramon Capri, and that's at R. Or not Capri, Capra, at @rcapra_UM. Why don't they just stretch the fairing on the Falcon Heavy to fit 10 plus more satellites, being that the diameter is fine and they are stacked vertically? Ultimately, over the constellation, it could save 15 to 20 launches and a lot of money.
So this is about
what do you guys...
satellites being Starlink satellites he's talking about?
Yep. So why don't they just make it taller, you know, because clearly they can just keep stacking. Why don't they increase the height of the fairing, you know, maybe launch it on a Falcon Heavy. They're clearly maxed out on Falcon 9. This is the heaviest payload Falcon 9 or any SpaceX launch has ever done already. So put it on. It's 18.5 tons. So it's the heaviest launch ever. And they're still planning to recover the booster. So they're really pushing it to the limit. But yeah, you know, why not stretch it a little bit, put it up on Falcon Heavy? What do you guys think?
Something about aerodynamics, something, it'll break. There's my answer.
Yeah, Joe?
Got to be honest, that's a good question. I'm sure there's a reason. I mean, they would have to rebuild the fairings, and I know they're a lot more expensive than we think they are. So that might add to the cost or undo the savings that they're getting there, maybe. I assume it would cost more to do a Falcon Heavy launch than a Falcon 9 launch. And I think ultimately it might be cheaper to just do a whole bunch of Falcon 9 launches than fewer Falcon Heavy launches. I'm making a lot of assumptions here, but that's a good question.
If you stretch the fairing out, it would look less phallic, and we know that rocket makers are clearly opposed to that. So,
well, but if this is the heaviest the Falcon 9 can launch, then I mean, there's your answer right there. It would have to be on a Falcon Heavy.
And that's what he said too. Why don't you put it on a Falcon Heavy and fit, you know, 10 plus more?
Yeah.
So let me give you there's a few reasons. And again, remember, engineering is always, you know, especially I think any engineering is always a matter of like compromises, right? Finding where the two lines diverge or converge or whatever, and say, okay, here's where we're going to decide to do this. So I think first and foremost, They have a single fairing machine. Making a new, bigger fairing requires a whole new bit of tooling, and that's a huge cost that, you know, you have to take that into consideration. So let's talk about the cost consideration. You have to take that into consideration. The next part is, no matter what, whether it be a Falcon 9 or a Falcon Heavy, you're throwing away that upper stage. That's a sunk cost, no matter what. That upper stage is thrown away. So if you are going to be throwing away an upper stage, you know, the boosters are going to cost money too. You know, like even if you reuse them, you still have to pay for, you know, the fuel and the handling of the boosters and refurbishing a little bit and doing all the checks and stuff. That's not free. There's probably several millions of dollars in there per booster. We'll say maybe say $2 million to recover and refuel and refly a booster. I have no idea. I'm making up a number. That's another cost to consider. So if you can stretch the fairing, say 20% more, and now you can put, you know, 20% more, is that more revenue, more potential, you know, satellites than it is to refly three boosters, basically, is the real number one consideration. I don't know that number. I would guess probably not. That it's probably too expensive to fly a Falcon Heavy versus 20% more satellites. Right. But the next big thing is the Falcon 9 and the Falcon Heavy are already at the absolute, like, basically at the absolute limits of their fineness ratio. So the Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy are the finest rockets ever made. Do you know that?
Hey, baby.
Wait, what yeah. what are you using there?
Fine.
Fine, like finest, like she's fine.
Yeah, these are the finest rockets ever made.
What does that mean?
It's actually the ratio of width to length.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that funny? Like a fine, think about like a fine, is it pencils? Do they use that term sometimes?
Yeah.
So it's fine the point. Length of length to width. And the Falcon 9 is already at its absolute max, basically. Mm. Which, remember last night's launch got scrubbed because of upper level winds. Mm-hmm. Upper level winds are the number one problem probably for the Falcon family. You'll notice that they scrub for upper level winds more often than other rockets. I don't know if you've ever heard of another rocket company scrubbing for upper level winds, is because those wind shears on a really skinny vehicle like that, you know, if you're flying up and all of a sudden you go from winds blowing it, you know, 100 kilometers this way, and then, you know, 4 seconds later, the wind shears are blowing 180 degrees. If you have a really skinny rocket, that skinny rocket's going to go snap. Mm. And so if you stretch that out anymore, even the fairing, you know, you're adding leverage across the whole vehicle. It is a huge engineering decision and a consideration to make that fairing any bigger. You know, so yes, they probably could make the fairing a little bit bigger. Maybe. Physically, maybe. They're already pretty darn close to the absolute limit, I'm guessing.
Definitely maybe.
Definitely maybe. Would it pay off? Probably not. And that's the answer. I'm guessing the cost considerations of doing all that does not pay out over doing it how they're doing it now.
And keeping in mind, they don't have anybody paying for this launch. They're their own customer here. It's all coming right out of their own budget. So I'm sure that the margins, like, they got to keep it as small as possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a fun one to consider, though. I got that question a lot of different ways about the fairing getting bigger. Why not make the fairing bigger and et cetera, et cetera. So it's really interesting. I did not know that this is the heaviest payload until yesterday. I don't think anyone knew. I don't think anyone actually understood how heavy these first 60 satellites are.
I just want to know, are they going to show the satellites peeling off?
Yes.
You know if they're going to do that?
Yes. He did say that they're going to show it. And get this. This is a pro tip. We'll find out. This probably won't air until after, you know, the people listening to this probably won't know about it until tomorrow. But it sounds like the booster actually, we assumed roll, you know, think of like a corn cob. Of course, I'm going to think of a corn cob. Mm-hmm. Think about all the kernels splaying out, like, you know, I don't have a very good visual for those of you listening. how would I explain this? Pretend you're holding an ear of corn like you'd hold an ear of corn, like you'd hold like a microphone. And then the rings of corn, like you spin that. How do you explain this? Oh, I know. Ear of corn, you're eating it, how it rolls, you know, as you eat it. You roll it this way. You don't eat a piece of corn by rolling it this way, right? Mm. You roll it like through your fingers.
I'm going to try that though.
Do it with
the
drill.
The idea is, yeah, with a drill, exactly. Spinning it that way on its like Z axis. So if you let go of all of the kernels at once, it all splay out, you know, in a cool fashion. That's what I thought he was doing. That's what I thought they're talking about, but I think it's actually a different thing. I think they're actually going end over end with the booster, and they have these four pins that will ping out and like over them all. They're all just going to like, what? Like that.
What?
Okay. Pancake out. I got to see that. No, the footage of the India Space Agency, ISRO, when they did like, yeah, what was it, 104, 114, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hilarious because it's flying through the air. And it's just like, doom, 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 yeah, doom, just like, just peeling off. It's like, that's so cool. Like, I wanted to see,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So this will be very different. And he said they might even bump into each other a little bit, which would be interesting, but they're designed for that, I guess.
Like a good idea.
Doesn't sound very space age. Like, yeah, they might bump each other. Whatever. We're fine.
And these are really more like test satellites. These are not like the end. It seems like I saw Gwen Shotwell say somewhere that these are like half functional or something like that. Like these are, they're just kind of testing everything out.
These are production.
They already launched the test typical, ones, I thought, right?
They launched two test satellites like a year ago. These are the first set of production satellites, but in typical SpaceX fashion, you know, production can mean like that's constantly changing, you know.
Yeah.
Think about like the Merlin, everything they do, they just like, they'll do it. They'll be like, all right, what can we do better? Doom, change tweaking that to the production line, you know? So yes, production.
Yeah.
We gotta fly through this next one real quick because I feel like,
yeah, we've spent 15 minutes on Starlink.
That's good. Jeez. It's all right. Good though. It's been a while. We miss each other. Or I miss you guys.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So real quick, I want to just say, like, last week I did my own little thing at the beginning where I was like, I don't really know how to talk without Ben Tinder. and I just want to say, I looked in the comments at one point, and there were several comments that were like, oh, Joe, you're awesome. You bring all this stuff to the thing. And I just want to thank everybody for those comments. Those were very nice. Meant a lot to me. And I promise I wasn't fishing for those comments. That was like real low self-esteem that you were seeing. Like, that's like, I don't mean to brag, but I think really poorly of myself. So it was real. But anyway, Joe, just wanted to thank people for that.
I just want to say that I really like having you on the show because I think you always add fun little tidbits that, like, I feel like my face is like this more often when listening to you than Ben. No offense, Ben, but yeah. That's what you offer, Joe. You offer those random pew, 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 pews.
I do
that we can only get.
Pew, 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 pew.
So let's talk about this really quick.
Speaking of pew, pew.
So you know how a couple of weeks ago we talked about how the administration claims they're going to try to get to the moon in 5 years, you know, maybe a month ago or so. That was kind of a big deal. And I was like, this is great. I'm, of course, a huge supporter of getting humans back to the moon in 5 years. And then I said, I'll believe it when I start seeing more money flow, because really that's what it's going to take. It's going to take more money and more focus. And then all of a sudden we got a tweet from the president of the United States, Mr. Donald Trump, on the 13th, so a couple days ago, saying, under my administration, we are restoring NASA to greatness, and we are going back to the moon, then Mars. I'm updating my budget to include an additional $1.6 billion so that we can return to space in a big way. And that's not... It's funny.
You could have used big really, there. That would have been better.
I'm not, you know, I'm not one of those people... we don't want to talk politics per se, but I just couldn't help but laugh that people were like, just tearing Donald or, you know, President Trump apart on this. It's like, to me, guys, if someone says something that I like, I don't care about the politics. I like more money going to NASA. I like trying to get humans to the moon. I like that he said this, period. Like, I don't want to get any more into that here on the show. So keep your own opinions about what people say. The fact that this is even a step in the right direction, I'm very supportive of that. So the idea is we're going to try to get back to the moon here, guys. Oh, I don't really want to play the sound on this. But yeah, look at this. Then NASA released this. Bridenstine, the NASA administrator, had a town hall meeting the other day and basically said, like, we're going to try to do this with one but. And this is the but that I cannot stand. They talk about all this and they say, and we're going to do it with SLS and Orion.
Yeah.
Like, still just absolutely saying how we're going to do it. And that would be fine to me because, honestly, the system, it's almost done. It really is almost done. And if they can do that, great. do it, please. Please do it. Please make use of that vehicle. Please do that. And then, so in my opinion, I could see this being something like, you know, notice how last week Blue Origin announced a moon lander. The Orion's not going to land on the moon, but a moon lander could. So I could see Blue Moon really being vying to get in line with, you know, the Orion capsule and with NASA's program and saying like, hey, you know, Blue Origin could say, hey, we're going to put this out in lunar orbit for you. We're going to have this blue lander fully fueled, ready to go. You get your Orion capsule there. We'll meet up there. We'll sell you a ride to and from your Orion capsule to the surface of the moon and back. Mm-hmm. And I could literally see that being the whole big game plan. But this is the Artemis program. Artemis obviously is like kind of a sister to Apollo program. So 50 years later, getting humans back to the moon. Please, 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 let's do this. I'm fully supportive of returning to the moon. So yeah, we're seeing some actual like more serious talk than I've seen since I've been following this stuff.
So a couple of questions. The mm-hmm. Artemis program, is there like, I know this is stupid, I can just go look myself, but is there like a website out there with this plan in place, or is it just like the name that's been given to it and we don't really know what the details are yet?
You know, that's actually, I kind of missed whether or not they okay. have like a layout.
I did see a website somewhere, I think on Scott Manley's video, he kind of brought up something, but there was something called Artemis like back in the 90s too. Like this isn't yes. the first time that name has been used. And of course, then there's that Andy Weir novel, which he's got to be celebrating that a little bit. But
free press.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is, so 1.6 million, do you know what their budget is? Like how much of an addition is this to their budget?
Well, I think their budget's about $20 billion or so. So it's, okay. you know, 3, 4, or 5% raise, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, that was my only thing when I saw the number. I just didn't, it didn't sound like that much money. I mean, more money's good for them.
I'll take $1.6 billion, but, you know. It's...
Yeah.
Well, but when your budget's $20 yeah, billion, exactly. it's like, it's a small pay raise, right? It's like adjusted for inflation. It's like really.
But a lot yeah. of those, you know, a lot of what NASA does are kind of like a sunk cost. You know, there's going to be a lot of fees that, you know, things that just keep programs running, keep programs. So anything additional to a NASA budget
yeah.
can literally directly affect, you know, like yeah. developing a system like this. So that's good.
Right.
Because it might be right. doubling. It might be doubling the program as the, you know, that part of the program.
The SLS.
You know what I mean?
But it,
yeah.
Is that all it really takes to get to the moon? 1.6 billion?
Honestly, SpaceX thinks they can do it for like half of that even.
I was going to say, like, can't Elon just write us a check for this?
How much did the Apollo program cost?
A lot.
I mean, that was a whole different world back then, though. Like, we were
right.
competing with the Russians and everything. But
it's still not. The Apollo program is cheaper than the International Space Station.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting to think. The entire Apollo program was cheaper than the ISS.
But that was all the United States sinking into Apollo and International Space Station is like...
International collaboration. International. But I still wouldn't be surprised if the U.S. has spent more on ISS than Apollo.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know that number, but I do know that the ISS program as a whole is significantly more expensive than the Apollo program.
Yeah.
I think the Apollo program was still... I should probably figure this out. But I think it's like somewhere around like $50 billion or something for the whole.
Somebody's gonna let us know in the comments.
Yeah, I'm gonna let us know right now. but so yeah, this to me like the hard part is doing this much cheaper than we used to do it. You know, that's the reason why we haven't gone back to the moon is because it was like a we'll make up a number $50 billion cost to get to the moon in the first place. You know, we're not spending that kind of money these days. On stuff like that, there just isn't. So it needs to be commercialized. It needs to be significantly cheaper. And if we can get this down to, you know, where contracts are secure, if we could even get to the moon for $1 billion each time for substantial stays on the moon for like a week trip, you know, mission cost of $1 billion, that'd be amazing. That would be really great. But we'll see. This is fun. This is fun stuff.
Well, yeah. Take what we can get.
Why don't they just do that?
So there we go. Why don't they just, there's so many things that they could just, why don't they just?
Why don't we just talk about some Tesla stuff now?
Why don't they just use Face ID, guys? I really think this is a thing.
Your video
yeah.
was really cool and scary as F.
Ben, give us a rundown on what the heck you did
Yeah, because I didn't fully follow it, honestly. I was like, how did you?
Yeah, yeah. Your friend's so brilliant. All right. I'm scared of him.
So a while ago, I think on here, we were talking about it. And
yeah, you had mentioned it
before. Because I think we were all kind of, well, me mostly was kind of groaning about the phone key not working very well. And Joe, you had some problems. And Tim, I think you were like, nope, everything's fine. I don't know. Whatever. So, we've all had, a lot of us have had issues with the phone key. And the question back then was, why don't they just use Face ID? They have all these cameras around there. Like, it's facial recognition is a thing. So I don't know what hair got up my butt, but I just thought, like, why don't I try to actually do this? And it turns out one of my good friends, Adam Getchy, has the most popular programming library, which is like a piece of code that you share, open source, whatever. Like one of, if not the most popular in the world for doing real-time facial recognition with a webcam. And so it's literally like just here's the code, go, you know, set it up on your computer and boom, you know, Bob's your uncle, like you're up and running. And
no, he's not.
With TesLab, we have all the controls already set up in our app to unlock the car and do all these things. And I'm like, okay, if I can just mash these two things together, this should work, right? And so that's basically what I did. I set up the code that my buddy Adam wrote for doing facial recognition. I trained the algorithm on my face just by giving it an image and then, you know, tested that all out and then just put in the code to unlock the car, which if you don't know how to get that or all of that stuff, that's like, what? How do you do that? But if you do know the right like bits to send over the internet, it's actually really easy. So that was it. And so I spent an afternoon doing that, and I'm like, well, this is kind of a cool video. Let's do this.
Bless you.
Now, in the video, I showed how to do it, and I explained it. But I think I did probably a poor job. Like Simone Giersch, mm-hmm. you know, who makes all the crappy robots. She doesn't like a lot of her videos are just like, hey, this was a dumb idea I had. Let's go do it. And it's cool. And that's kind of what this was. But because of my nature of wanting to tell a story and have context and like shape it in a way that's like it could be a real thing, I think a lot of people took that video very seriously and thought like, this is it. It'll work. I'm like, no. In order for Tesla to actually do this, there's so much more that they would have to do. And as many people obviously pointed out, was like, well, this is totally insecure. Yeah, duh.
That's why right? It's not being done right now.
It is very insecure. And I talked about that in the video, but of course, you know, people go write comments before they watch the whole video. So, but it's one of those things. So it was actually, it's very simple. A couple pieces of software running on my laptop with a webcam. I actually just ordered something called a NVIDIA Jetson Nano. There's some new buzzwords for you. And this is a little, it's like a Raspberry Pi, if you guys heard of those, you know, like little computers you can program. It's really good for learning. But Raspberry Pis are you know, just notoriously underpowered. Like, they're not like, they couldn't do real-time facial recognition with the camera. Like, it maybe one frame per second or something terrible like that. This thing is a little AI computer that's designed to run machine learning algorithms and has, like, maybe, like, a PlayStation 2 amount of horsepower. So we could probably do, like, a full 30 frames a second. So I ordered one of those, and I'm going to keep going with this thing. And people have asked, like, a fingerprint reader. So, you know, I can, like, hook up a fingerprint reader to it and, like, put that outside of my car, see if that would work. So I don't know. Like, it was a real fun video to make, and it just really, like, to me, like, I've been working in tech for so long. Digital stuff is just so boring. For me to actually make something that is in real life, like it unlocked your car, that's amazing. So I'm probably going to do a lot more videos on this. So if anyone listening has ideas for things that they want to see, like, man, I mean, this stuff is just becoming easier and easier. So, yeah, that was what that whole video was about and kind of how it worked. But I think I delivered it in a way that's like, this is a real thing. And I'm like, no, this was just a dumb experiment that I threw together. And I thought it was cool, you know? Yeah. So,
well, between that and the Wi-Fi one at the supercharger, that one was pretty cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool. You got Pat Flynn to help you out. I know you guys are friends and all, but I've been listening to his podcast for years. So I was like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah, I was like, hey, Pat, can I steal your car?
What would it take? So could you actually hack the actual car? Would that take a whole other level of like hacking to be able to make it so the car's camera unlocks the car, like all natively?
Okay, there's a couple problems. So that's what I'm going towards. And I should be able to do it.
Dang.
But and I'll explain how in a video later. Don't want to get into it now, but I should be able to use the car's actual cameras and make this a real thing. The big challenges, the big problems are that, first off, unless you have a Model X, the camera in the pillar, B pillar, doesn't really point at your face unless you're like 4 feet tall.
Yeah, you'd have to like get down.
Yeah, so the angle sucks. So you'd have to use not facial recognition, but something called GAIT, which is GAIT, if you guys want to look it up. And this is
walk?
It's same idea of like identification, but based on how a person or an animal or something moves through space. So imagine you could set up a camera in like the wilderness and be like, oh, that's a cheetah, right? And just like based on how it walks, things like that. So this is even less secure than Face ID facial recognition.
Unlocked.
So this is even more problematic.
Are you saying you could steal someone's car by mimicking their walk?
I guess if they had a distinctive enough walk, it's more likely it would just get false positives all over the place.
Yeah.
But with 8 cameras, I mean, it depends where you walked from. There is a long shot of this actually working.
No, here's what I see happening. Here's what I would do. Sorry, I just have to jump in with this. You've seen the Monty Python silly walks thing with John Cleese, and his legs are all askew everywhere. Mm. No, am I really? Come on, guys. No, what you could do is program your car to only open if you walk up in a certain way. And then everybody would walk up to their Teslas in this like weird shuffle or something, you know, and, like that's what opens it.
Or like a secret handshake.
That's what I would do.
That's what I want to do.
A secret handshake you do to your car.
You
got to
like MC Hammer crab walk up to it, and then that's what opens it.
I
love
it.
Do the Mick Jagger
thing.
Do you guys see that video?
It's like a dance step you've got to do to open your car.
I love it.
Yeah.
But.
And that is something Elon would do, I think.
Yes, it is. That's, yeah.
So, yes, it's possible. Okay. The one thing that is not possible currently is I cannot run software on the car.
Right.
I cannot install an app. This is something that I've been screaming about. I even got to ask Elon this question. He just was like, yeah, no, idiot. Like, you know, in a nicer term, he was like, no, dummy. Well, that's stupid. Let's not do that. But yeah, if I could run software on the car, and what I'm trying to do is not actually violate terms of service or something like that, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to do it in a way that's above bar. But if you could run software on the car, this would all be very, very possible. So this is why in the video I talked about, like, Tesla could very easily do this. As I, as a really crappy coder, showed, this is like not complicated from a software standpoint. But there are, you know, tremendous amounts of other problems or challenges that come along with it, such as just running all 8 cameras 24/7. Or like Sentry mode, you know, eats up a ton of battery. So things like that, mm-hmm. you know, it could come in the future. I think that there are probably other better ways to do it. Like I would not be shocked if they're like, no, never mind. Like there's a better way over here.
Speaking of Sentry mode, I did not realize how much battery it chews up. And I turned it on, you know, I was in DC and then flew right to Seattle. So I was going to be gone for like 5 or 6 days. Left Sentry mode on, on the car while parked at the airport. Checked 2 days after I had been gone, and like 25% of the battery had been drained already. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get home, you know? So I turned off Sentry mode, and then it was fine. It was like 1% a day.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I think it's like, so your car probably, depending on conditions, and of course there's so many different conditions, but you lose like maybe 2, 3, maybe 5 miles overnight, something like that. Or throughout the day when, like, you know, you go, you're at work or you're, you know, getting coffee and your car's just sitting there, you know, you rack up maybe 10 miles of range loss on an average day.
Mm-hmm.
But this with Sentry mode on, you'll rack up like 30 miles of, it'll be like triple.
Or at least.
So, yeah. Yeah. So it's a thing, you know, it would be really cool. Yeah. Like, I wonder if they could use the ultrasonic sensors. Like, I'm not sure. I think now it's using the cameras and if it detects close motion in a camera, it turns on, but that's probably more power than necessary. Like if you could use ultrasonic sensors or some other way to detect something, Although I guess if a car hit you, if, you know, quickly you, and you didn't turn them on right away because they do take a second to spin up. I don't know. Yeah.
By the way, did you hear that Sentry Mode caught another guy keying a Tesla?
Yes, I saw that.
I saw that this morning. Yeah.
Man, I can't. It's just insane to me that that people are out there like that. That are just like, oh, look at this nice car. Let's key it. What is wrong with you? I hope that these people get like. And it becomes a thing of like, hey, if you're going to do this, you're going to get caught and you're going to get had to pay for it and you are wasting a lot of your money.
Yeah. I'm much more like if I see a car that I really like, clearly they don't like Tesla, so they wouldn't do that. But I'm just not like somebody that would get jealous about it. I might just be like, oh, wow, like, how did you do that? Or, you know, or can I see your car or something, you know, but clearly it's not about that. It's about like what it stands for to these people. And
yeah, that dude had a America shirt on it too. When didn't realize
it was like right out of Central Casting or something.
Yeah, like I'm not going to go up to a like lifted diesel polluting, you know, like big truck that I don't personally am not a fan of. I would never in a million years consider doing any damage to the vehicle. Like, what is someone else's property? What is wrong with you people?
Yeah. I mean, I carry a machete. That's
your.
If it comes down to it,
machete mode.
machete mode. So yeah, so Face ID, you know, could be a thing, but they would have to have some updates and some better ways of doing it. Clearly, what I was doing was just like a, holy crap, I made this thing work. Let's go do a video on it. But you know, speaking of updates to Teslas, there are some new ones coming for the batteries for the flagship lineup, which. Should be the S and the X, for the record. The flagship cars are getting these updates, not the the. What's a non-flagship? This is like the iPhone C, something like that. Okay, so there were those battery fires, or there was that one battery fire in the garage that kind of was just unexplained. It was like a gremlin. And Tesla has apparently investigated that and are updating some of the software for the battery management system in the S and X. As a precaution. And so they made a statement here. They said, our team, this is from Tesla in response to that, they said, our team was on site to offer support to our customer and establish the facts of this incident. We are glad that everyone is safe. While our investigation with authorities is ongoing, we have found that only a few battery modules were affected and the majority of the battery pack is undamaged, which is surprising considering how big the fire is. I added that part. Tesla battery packs are engineered with state-of-the-art design so that in a very rare instance of a fire, if a fire does occur, it spreads very slowly and vents heat away from the cabin, alerting occupants that there's an issue, giving them enough time to exit the vehicle. The safety of our customers is our top priority, and if we do identify an issue, we will do whatever is necessary to address it. That is from a Tesla spokesperson who I could guess who that is. And then they continue to say, we have currently have over 500,000 vehicles on the road, which is more than double the number that we had at the beginning of last year. And Tesla's team of battery experts use that data to thoroughly investigate incidents that occur and understand the root cause. Although fire incidents involving Tesla vehicles are already extremely rare and our cars are 10 times less likely to experience a fire than a gas car, we believe the right number of incidents to aspire to is zero. As we continue our investigation of the root cause out of an abundance of caution, that's a very classic corporate term, we are revising charge and thermal management settings on the Model S and X vehicles via over-the-air software update, which I actually got one last night. I haven't checked the release notes to see what it was. We are updating over-the-air software updates that will begin to rolling out today to help further protect the battery and improve longevity. So there you go. So, you know, cause and effect, right? They see a problem and they resolve it. Which, by the way, we are getting two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
Another.
Finally.
I'm just going to put, like, mission accomplished in the background.
Yeah, seriously. That's a good one. And I'm glad I wouldn't doubt that your video helped push that through.
Who knows? You know, I don't have kind of the direct connection you do, Tim. So,
you know, I can't help be you know, best friends with Elon. It's It's not my fault.
People did comment. They were like, "Don't you, Ben? Don't you know you're supposed to have Tim send these these tweets?"
So what we have here is like Tim is Elon's bestie. Ben is like the antagonist.
That's exactly the word I was going to use.
He doesn't know that I exist, so that's fine. That's where we are.
But Andy Weir's your buddy, so
yeah, you got Andy Weir, man. Come on,
yeah,
that's stretching a little bit. The guy tweeted at me, so.
Andy follows you on Twitter, doesn't he?
Hmm?
Andy follows you somewhere, right?
He was watching my video. He said he was binge watching my videos and saw that I had his book in the background. So
let's get him on the show.
I would love to get him on the show.
Let's do it. Why don't they just get him on the show?
Where does he live? Probably LA, right?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know either.
We
haven't
just
hung out with him.
Yeah. Come on, Joe.
Not a plug for WeWork, but they just started opening up podcast and video like rooms that you can rent at different locations. So it's kind of cool. Like imagine he did want to do that. Like, and if he were in California, you know, we could go there and just be like, "Yo, here's a full studio. Just, you know, click a button, up and running," kind of a thing. So that'd be fun.
We could also do it at the LA YouTube studios too.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun. Have you guys ever tried to use those things?
I've been to it, but I haven't ever had a need to use one though.
Yeah.
Well, cool. When I did the Next Up program in New York, I was there for a whole week, so I know I have access to it, but I'm not in New York, so it doesn't really help me too much.
Yeah. Oh man. And speaking of New York, there's a city in New York.
Ooh. Dang, that was so good.
We're on segue mode.
So this is our best segue day ever. Okay, wow. So in New York. Where Gigafactory 2 is located. Can I share my screen?
No. Please don't.
I want to like show a photo of a thing. Let's try to share the screen. This will mess up my audio tremendously. I know. Okay. Tesla is now... Okay, so Tesla has Gigafactory 2 in Buffalo, New York. And when they took over this plant, I forget from whom, it was you know, making solar panels and solar cells. And 2019, according to Elon, is the year of the solar roof and the power wall. So, you know, lots of stuff coming out of there. They actually got something like $750 million in state rebates or in tax incentives, essentially. But they had to employ a certain number of people by, I believe it was April 30th of this year. Which just came by a little while ago. And so they made an actual statement or they filed something with the state. And in fact, they are employing more than the requirement there. So they are going to get those incentives. There were a lot of, I don't know what you want to call this, short-sighted media outlets that were reporting they weren't going to get them. And of course, that was going to be the ultimate downfall. Finally, this will be the straw that broke Tesla's back. But no, they're not. And so, I mean, that's cool, right? That's like a bit of company news. But the more interesting thing, I thought, is that they're starting supercharger production for V3. Or the supercharger V3 production is starting there, which I don't think was planned. I don't think that's where they were meant to be making them. But with that, that means that we're going to start to see supercharger V3 more prevalent, and everyone's going to know, or everyone's going to try to figure out which ones are V3 and mark them on a map or something. We'll have to have like a way, because how could you possibly use a V2 supercharger now that there's V3, guys? Come on.
Well, actually, doesn't the built-in nav now tell you charging capacity?
It tells you how many stalls there are, but it doesn't tell you... Oh, and it does tell you the charging
max
rate.
Charge rate. Yeah. So people will kind of know. I think
the one in Hawthorne is like closed. The V3 one they installed there.
Oh, really?
I could check, though, because I was just up there when I got my Model X. So
when I got... this is why we make fun of Ben, because he has to make sure to include... When I got my Model X, or like, you know, when I'm picking up one of my seven Roadsters, I'll be sure and check out the V3.
I am planning on doing a photo that's like a drone shot, and just in a parking lot. Because currently at my house, I have three, which is ridiculous. But so with like the three I have, and then a drone shot, and then like Photoshop in the two Roadsters and the Model Y.
I'd
be like, yeah, the family photo.
Is that TV show Hoarders still on? I think we have a new candidate for a
Tesla.
I just can't get rid of them. No, I am. So people have been asking. I haven't said anything publicly yet, but I am going to sell the Model S. But I'm going to kind of fix it up and make it, you know, pretty and all that and do a whole video on it. And it will be available for sale on my website, taking kind of Tesla's. At first, I'm like, yeah, I'll list it on Auto Trader or something. It's like, no, I probably don't need to do that, you know.
Yeah, that's fun. Congrats again, sir.
Yeah.
On your 10th Tesla. So V3, do you guys have any idea, like, when – because they're not – am I right that they aren't planning to ever put V2s in the ground from now on, basically? Like, any new supercharger will be V3, or is that not correct?
Not that I've heard. Is that what it said?
No, I don't know. I just thought I heard that somewhere, that it's like from here on out, they're just going to only be installing V3s. But
That would mean that they would have to – production would have to – because they have really – well, and they would still do the urban ones for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So that can't be 100% right. Maybe the bigger ones, they're only doing that. But that would mean production is, like, already up and going or whatever, because these – although, you know, really, like, from my understanding, a lot of the supercharger thing is not really proprietary. It's like, they get the cables and everything from all these other companies. It's not like they make, you know, the rubber that goes around the thing. Right. Like, they just buy that and assemble it. So – I mean, yeah, it takes work. It's not like it's, you know, you can just Amazon it again. But it's something that has to work there. Something that probably doesn't take that long to spin up. So I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, the question I have about that is how much capacity do these places have? Because when I talked to somebody about this who knows a lot more about charging infrastructure than I do, he was saying that, like, in a lot of places, they'll have to get a new transformer installed at, like, you know, for the whole mall or wherever it is, just to handle this much energy throughput. So if you're, you know, what, how much faster is a V3? 2.5 times faster, something like that? I mean, if you installed 50 of those things, you might have to do some other major infrastructure upgrades too. So I don't know. Yeah, I would be surprised if they switched to just 100% V3, unless you could somehow say, oh, the transformer can't support it yet, so we're just going to throttle it down, or I don't know. The supercharger team definitely seems to be kind of humming along, though, and doing a good job, I think. So,
okay, so refresh my memory here. So the V3 is not it's only for Model 3, right? Like, it doesn't work for the S and X. Is
that right? Currently, but actually, I think is the new model S and X, like, if it, I forget exactly what it is. Because, yes, some of the newer ones are able to take. It's not the same, though. It's not one-to-one. Oh, actually, was it when they updated the batteries, they also updated the charging bit, so now it could go 200 kilowatts?
I think 200, yep, was the new peak.
Yeah, and the old ones can do 250.
And old ones can do 150 now, right? I think they can take advantage of the full version 2 speeds, and even a version 3 supercharger, I think, would charge an older S&X at 150, which would still be an upgrade.
That's a lot more, yeah.
Yeah. That's I can't more. Wait to try out a V3 on a road trip. I mean, that sounds nuts.
Yeah, it's almost like, Joe, were you saying it, that it's almost a bad thing?
I was saying that.
You were saying that to me, like I need 20 or 30 minutes after driving for 4 hours or something.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know that I would say need, and frankly, you know, sometimes you need to get places, and you're in a rush, and you got to beat traffic, or you got a meeting or something, you know, so obviously it's helpful there, but, like, just my experiences, and it's very limited as compared to a lot of people's, but my experience with when I've used a supercharger is that by the time I'm sitting, it's just like, by the time I wind down, which takes a few minutes, it's kind of like, oh, I got to get back on the road.
Yeah, like, you need a few more minutes, right?
Yeah. Well, and I'm dead serious. Like, lots of times when I'm supercharging, it's also lined up with, like, dinner or, you know, or lunch or something. So I'll go across the street and get lunch. And, like, but if it's literally done charging and going to start charging me idle fees by the time I get my food, that's actually an issue. Like, I'll have to tweak the way I do things, I guess. But, like, it'd be the same as, like, if you filled up on gas, you know, say you had a huge gas tank and it takes actually, like, 8 minutes to fill up, and you plug it in, you know, and start pumping, and you go inside to go to the bathroom and get your drink, and all of a sudden you look out the door and it's pouring gas all over the ground. You'd probably be like, oh, that's not good. You know, it's almost, that's a different version of that, but yeah.
Yeah. I actually filled up my truck with gas yesterday, first time in months. And it took a lot longer than I remembered. It was weird.
Really?
Yeah. And it cost the same that like 3 months of charging cost me for yeah, one really? Tank. I was like, yeah. man, this is... Now, of course, it's for some reason more expensive out here, but yeah, it's a weird thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, last week I went down to Austin to see my mom for Mother's Day, and I got all the way down there with no... didn't have to stop or anything. They had a destination charger there, so I just charged up Ooh. While I was there during the day, and I was good to go the next day. And I could have made it all the way back to Dallas, but it started giving me the whole, like, keep your speed under 70 or else you'll be in trouble thing. So I stopped at this place. There's a little town south of Dallas called Italy, but it's pronounced Italy because Texas. And there's a supercharger there, so I literally, like, pulled up, went inside, got a coffee, came back out, recorded a little thing for my TMI video, and I was good to go. And it was just, it was like nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Especially those batteries. People over-exaggerate how much of a hassle the supercharging thing is. It's actually quite pleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just getting better. I mean, I think honestly, in a year or two, we're just going to be laughing at the idea that people are like, complain. You can't go yeah. anywhere in a car. It's like, no, this is not even, it's like on par.
People, what I do, so... I may even do a video on this. So I was in Palm Springs last weekend, and I think I sold two Model X's while I was there because I was hanging out with some of my bougie friends, and, you know, a Model 3 is like, how could they ever? But the Model X is like, whoa, let's do this. And the thing I do is so first off, I raced a motorcycle and won. That was amazing. Like, legit, I was like, hey, dude, do you want to race? Yes, let's do this. He had, like, some fancy Ducati thing and smoked him. Like, not even a chance. And then this dude...
on a racetrack, of course, right? Not on public roads. Of course.
In a parking lot.
Silence is acceptance. So, yeah, so... so, okay. Anyway, so that bit, they were like, oh, my God, I have to get rid of my Range Rover, and I want one of these, right? But the thing I do is I say, I do the voice command, which... for people is like, what, it has voice commands? Even though I'm like, it only has three things, ah, it sucks. But for them, I'm like, you know, navigate to Boston is what I say. And when I do that, it, you know, it shows a map of the US, and because the dots are the size of, you know, a city, it's like, whoa, the whole country is just littered with superchargers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it zooms, because I'm very far from Boston. And yeah. And so when it does that, it like zooms out and you just see like, oh my God, there's literally thousands of chargers. Like, yeah, there are. So
I do that same thing. I always like navigate to somewhere far away. So because people are like, how do you road trip this? I'm like, let me show you.
Yeah. And just how do you figure out where to charge? Like it just does.
It tells you.
Like yeah. I don't figure it out. It does. Yeah. That's so cool. And you have the P90D Model X, right?
P90D with Ludacris and Ludacris Plus and all that, which I need to write Elon because I'm a little upset about this. It used to be Ludacris Plus was an Easter egg, and when you clicked on it, it would pop up that screen that's like, yeah. "Are you sure you want to do this?" or like, "No, call my mommy" or something.
Right.
It doesn't do that anymore. Now it's just like, you know. So in Tim and yours, when you go to driving, there's like chill, sport, and performance. Mm-hmm. Well, mine says chill, sport, ludicrous, and then ludicrous plus is just like a button, just like another option.
Really?
So I just leave my car in that all the time, which really? Is probably like really good for the battery. Yeah.
Well, because actually, I know why not, because it keeps the battery at this crazy operating temperature so that it can discharge really quickly. So you're constantly keeping your battery in that state.
I haven't noticed any. So I've done it, like, car's been sitting. I get in, boom, and it doesn't ask me, tell me anything about needing to keep the battery up. And I've not actually even noticed a difference on launches between the two. So I don't know. Like, I don't know. My car is old. It's used. You know, it's got like 1,200 miles on it. So, you know, it's one of those things. But yeah, so I wonder, like, I'm bummed that it doesn't have the, like, you know, I want my mommy thing. And also, I just haven't noticed a difference. So I wonder if it's still a thing or not. Or if just ludicrous is that, and it's just like, oh, we'll just put this button there to shut them up, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe yeah. we could have a podcast with a bunch of extra bits from this podcast and call it our Ludicrous Future Plus.
Ooh. They've gone plaid.
I shouldn't have put that out into the universe.
Yeah, because now everyone's going to want it.
Yeah.
It'd be like an extra longer thing where we just start ranting about nonsense.
Yeah.
I thought that's what we were doing here.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're doing here.
That is true.
So speaking of what we're doing here, what are you guys working on these days?
We're never going to have this good of segues ever. That's it. Yeah. That's the end.
This is peak. We're done. This is the peak. Joe, what are you working on?
Okay, so this is kind of, I hope, will be a very fun video. It was fun for me to work on. How about I yawn while I do this? That's fun.
Showing how fun it was.
So it was really fun. Game of Thrones ending on Sunday, after 10 years and lots of deaths. I'm doing a video. Do you guys watch Game of Thrones? Familiar with it at all?
I'm familiar with it, but I don't watch it.
Okay. So one of the little things about this world that they live in is that they have seasons that last multiple years. And that's the whole winter is coming phrase. That's what that's all about, is that like they've been in a very long summer. It's lasted like 7 years or something like that. So they're expecting the next winter to be very long and brutal. So that's why they're always like, winter is coming, right? So basically what I did in this video is I looked at like scientifically how that might be possible to have seasons like that, like unpredictable and long running seasons. Like what kind of planet would you have to live on for that to be
like more of a elliptical orbit or something?
I talk about that.
Like yeah. Tidally locked.
That's not the ultimate answer, but that I talk about that. It's the unpredictability of it that's challenging. Because like even if you have an elliptical orbit where you're getting closer and further away, it would still be in regular patterns and you'd be able to know when it was coming. But
if you're living on an asteroid, that's
So anyway, it was a really fun video to work on, and I explored all these different answers, and I don't know, we'll see how it goes over. I don't know how big the Game of Thrones audience is with my channel, what the crossover is there, but we'll see.
Is the title going to be like, are you going to include Game of Thrones in the title, or is it going to be like, what would it take to have live on a, like what would it be like to live on a planet with,
what if winter really came?
I haven't worked out exactly what the title is going to be, but it's probably going to be something like what could cause the seasons that are on Game of Thrones or something like that. I'll definitely have it in the title.
Yeah.
Definitely could, like photos of every like major character in your thumbnail. Right.
And the cold.
Okay. Normally the smart thing to do is to know the title and the thumbnail before you even shoot the video. That's the smart thing to do. And I have not done that in this case.
Really? Oh, geez. I'm terrible at this.
No, apparently that's what I've heard over the years, and I at least try to be like aware of it, so that I make sure it all kind of ties together.
Do you guys ever A/B test your titles and thumbnails?
I never really have.
As in, like, how do you do that though? Do you have to upload it twice or what?
No, TubeBuddy has a thing where it will go change it every day, and then measure. So the things you want to measure are retention rates, like how long someone's watching, and click-through rates. So they measure both of those. But so day one will get the more views than day two.
Right.
But
inherently.
So if you just did overall views, it doesn't matter. So.
But I thought you're not really supposed to change your title and stuff after like the first day. Or does it not really matter?
I think there's a grace period of 48 hours in the first.
Our boss is an algorithm that doesn't talk to us. Who knows?
Well, Ben, what are you working on?
That might be a couple of years old, what I just said, but my understanding is that in the first 48 hours, you can kind of change it however much you want. After that, it kind of punishes you a little bit.
I thought it was an SEO thing, like Google indexes it and will, if you keep changing it, it won't.
Oh, it won't latch on.
It might be exactly that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing?
What are you guys working on?
Go ahead, Ben.
Well, I just finished building a deck for my wife at front of her studio. So that's, now that that's done, I really like that idea of the then and now, like to looking at Shamath's interview, because he did such a beautiful job of it, of basically defending a lot of the nonsense that people throw at Tesla, and kind of just going deeper into it. You know, like when he says this thing came true, like he just says it plainly, but like there's a whole history and thing about that point he just made, right? So I was thinking about kind of taking apart his interview a little bit and just going deeper on those points. And you know, the internet is written in ink, so we have some lovely juicy old headlines that we could throw in here. So that sounds like a fun video to do. And it's raining, so I can't really go outside, you know. which people will laugh at, like, what, you can't go outside of the rain? No. In San Diego, when it rains, you shut it down. You do not leave when it rains. And it's been raining a lot, so.
You know, what is this stuff falling from the sky? My favorite thing about that interview, if I may, just real quick, is that, like, you're right. He makes such compelling points, and it's like so matter of fact. They did this, they did that, busted this myth, busted that myth, and then of course it's on CNBC. So the other guy is like, but his tweets, and it's just like, and he looks at him like, are you an idiot? Like, seriously, like, that's what you're focused on? Seriously?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, good, like, for them. So many of those things, like, oh, Tesla's never been profitable. They had two profitable quarters in a row. Like, remember, Bezos did this too. Like, Amazon's like, yeah, oh, you're never going to be profitable. So what did he do? He cut it down, was profitable. He just burned all the shorts until they all were, like, dead. And then, like, cool, now we'll go back to growth phase. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you? When's our Raptor video coming?
It's getting closer, finally. I've shot it. That's a huge thing. It's over 45 minutes long.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is literally, like, turning into, like, a... It's like a mini documentary, but I'm really...
You had
really...
to go buy another terabyte micro SD card.
it took up... it was a full 500 gigs... Sorry, 497 gigs of 4K footage to shoot. It was almost 3 hours of recording in ProRes 422 Lite, for those of you curious.
Mm. Oh, snap.
That eats up some space.
Yeah, it eats up a lot of space. So I've cut the dialogue cut, which is good. I'm working on all the graphics. I've been kind of teasing those on Twitter and stuff. There's going to be a lot of work still, and I just really want to do this right. Like, I know I've been saying this for months now, but, like, it's a story. It's a story, and there's a lot of context to it. And my point is, it's just so important to me. Like, people are going, oh, Tim, you're supposed to be bringing space down to Earth for 80 people. Why are you showing us these diagrams? I'm like, this is the simplest diagram I've ever seen of a rocket engine on purpose, because it's hard, hard stuff to grasp. And I promise, like, the whole point is, by the end of this video, if you watch the video and you pay attention, I promise you'll have a better grasp of how this stuff works, way more than before, because I've learned so much doing this video that has been, like, you know, I think it's going to be really good.
I'm excited for it.
I don't know if it's going to have great views, but I just hope it's a good resource for people. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I hope more than anything.
It's always disheartening when people are like, man, thank you for dumbing this down for us all. And I'm like, that was me trying to be smart.
That's literally my life. It's like, it's taken me this long to grasp it enough to really be able to even, like, make it a thing. So to me, it's like, this is at my level. But then, like, I now know the context that it took me to get to this level.
Man, how many comments are you going to get? Be like, but, and then, you know.
Yeah. Like, no, I already had someone tweet at me when I showed one of those diagrams going, you don't even have, you're missing the pre-compressor for the fuel line. You're going to experience, you know, explosions. I'm like, this is a diagram. There's going to be a lot more problems with it than, like, that. Like, it's missing a million valves. It's missing, you know, I already listed a bunch of things missing, like back pressure, helium tanks and valves and ignition sources. Like, we're not doing that because that's what everyone does. Everyone gets so lost in the details of, like, oh, well, actually the fuel does route around the combustion chamber here. And then the diagrams look like junk and you can't follow them. You know,
a good analogy, or at least one, I'm self-aggrandizing, but an analogy I think would be good is how subway maps work, where the thing actually goes like this, but generally it's like you go from here to there. It's like, you know, you just kind of draw those lines. Like,
yes,
they overly simplify it because it's just easier to visualize that.
Because those details don't matter. You don't need to know that the track bends north, goes south, loops around Soho. Like, you don't need to know that. You need to know the stop is here and then the stop is there.
Yep.
You know, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do. I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, because it's, I mean, and, you know, my field I was in data, the big thing I was really focused on for many years was data visualization. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially the art of trying to convey complex things in really simple graphical ways. Mm-hmm. So not exactly like a diagram like you're talking about, but, you know, line charts and bar charts and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Well,
good deal.
Stand by. I'm like a week or two away. I know I said a week, I think last week, but I think I'm realizing how much work there still is to do. But I'm finally, like, home for at least, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks here. So maybe 2 weeks, fingers crossed. So I will be just, like, parking my butt in this chair, finishing that video ASAP, because I can't wait.
Good deal.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, guys.
All right, guys. We'll see you.
In our
ludicrous
future. Future. Future.
Future. Future. Future. Future.